Broadcasting.
What was that?
You clearly aren't in the building, Senator Burdick, because you're one room over from me. You would know what that is.
No, I am in the building. I'm in my office. Okay. Is the blue light on yet?
We are broadcasting.
Oh, okay. I didn't see it on my screen. Okay, welcome everyone. I will call the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue to order today. And Donita, would you please call the roll?
Senator Findley?
Senator Findley present by video.
Senator Riley?
Present by video.
Senator Wagner?
Wagner's present by video.
Vice Chair Boquist? He's excused, correct, Madam Chair?
Senator Boquist is excused, yes.
Madam Chair Burdick?
Present by video. Okay, we have one bill on our agenda today. This will be a first hearing on this bill, and my apologies for the lateness of the amendment, but everyone knows what the amendment was to do, so we're going to go ahead and have the public hearing. So I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 727.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Chris Hallenack, Legislative Revenue Office. So the bill as drafted is an LRO study bill, and the dash one amendment is a gut and stuff. And we got that, Leg Council was working overtime to get this ready for the committee, and it's only been posted for a couple of hours. So this is our first look at it. So the intent here is to really focus on the concept behind the language. And what it does is, it's in response to the federal legislation, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, that created a $10,000 cap on the itemized deduction, on the federal itemized deduction for state and local taxes. Since that time, when that passed in late 2017, states have looked for a way to respond to that federal limitation on the itemized deduction. And many of the plans that states came up with didn't pass muster with the IRS. But one version did, and I think a few states have adopted a variation of it. And so last year, the IRS gave a blessing to one of these plans that's New Jersey adopted. So the amendment you have before you in the dash one is copied largely, to the extent that we can, from the New Jersey legislation. And what it does is creates an entity level tax for pass-through entities, partnerships, S-corps, and LLCs. And so that raises a set amount of money. And then it allows each of the owners of that business to claim a share of, to claim a tax credit for their share of that tax increase. So it's an offsetting bill, so it's a net revenue neutral to the state. It just changes where the tax comes from. It reduces personal income taxes and raises it through this entity level tax on pass-through entities. And what that does is it reduces the personal income tax of the business owners, perhaps below the 10,000, and shifts some of that tax to the entity level. And the tax paid by the entity is fully deductible at the federal level. So basically, by moving that this certain tax liability from the individual to the entity, it can then be deducted against federal taxes. So, Madam Chair, if you want, I don't know that it's a good idea to walk through the entire amendment, but there are a couple of phrases that I just wanted to bring to people's attention in the bill, or if you wanted to go to the public testimony.
Why don't you go ahead and start with your overview of it, and then we'll go to the testimony, and then we'll probably have you back.
Yeah. So if you could turn to page 2, section 3, and I just want to highlight a couple of phrases in the bill, not reading the whole bill, but page 2, line 1, it starts off with a pass-through entity may elect to be liable. So it's an election by the entity. They can choose whether or not they want to pay this tax. And on line two, in the middle there, you'll see the phrase alternative income tax. And so that's what we're talking about. That's the language that we're talking about when we're talking about this new entity level tax. It's an alternative income tax. And then going down to lines 12 and 13, it shows that the election shall be made annually. So what's important there is that it's not a one and done for the entity. They can choose on an annual basis. Do we want to pay this tax this year or not? And then even on line 16, you can see the phrase may revoke. So the theme of all of this is it's not mandatory for the business. It's an election by the business if they want to take this path. So that's the main theme there of the first couple of sections, a couple of paragraphs on section three. And then on page three, you'll see the tax brackets and the rates. And these again are basically placeholders, if you will. This is taken from New Jersey. So there hasn't been a lot of thought or debate about what the bracket should be or what the tax rate should be. The committee chooses to go forward, it could be a simple single rate. This is just placeholder. And then the entity has to file the tax return. And then if you could scroll down to page four, lines 27 through 30, this is the language, this is the other end. So that first part was the high level details of the tax that's being created. And then page four, starting on line 27 toward the end there on the far right, there's language shall be allowed a credit against the taxes that are otherwise due under ORS chapter 316. This is the language that says the individual gets a personal income tax credit. Chapter 316 is the personal income tax. So the tax is raised at the business. Now the individual gets an income tax credit. And on line 30, there's language that says the credit allowed under this section shall equal the member's pro rata. And then on to page five, their pro rata share of the tax paid for the tax year. So that simply means, for example, if there are three members of the three shareholders in the business and they each pay a third of the tax, then they get a credit equal to a third. And then it's, and that's really the basic mechanics of the proposed policy here and the idea behind it. And it would apply to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2022, at least as currently drafted.
Okay.
There's a lot there.
Well, there is a lot there. And how do you, it's revenue neutral, correct, right now?
The intent is to be revenue neutral. And even the language there, it shows that the tax imposed on the entity is X dollars, and each of the business owners gets their share of the X dollars.
So does it matter where the rate is set?
It might matter for stakeholders on how much that tax is. We haven't looked at any of the revenue impact piece of it. It's really just shifting it around. And on the individual basis, I'm sure you'll hear from stakeholders over time here about how much that tax should be. It's going to vary on the business depending on how much their taxes are on the personal income tax side and how much they're affected by that SALT limitation. But the core question from the state's perspective is that it doesn't matter because it's being raised in one place and reduced in another.
Okay. All right. Well, we will call on Greg Peden, who's our only witness to sign up. Donita, I haven't seen any more signups. Do we have any more?
That is correct, Madam Chair. No additional signups.
Okay. Thank you. So, Greg, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Greg Peden here on behalf of a number of small businesses that I'm representing on this issue today. Thank you for the time. I think Chris covered a lot of it in great detail, and I haven't had a chance to look at the language that just came out a little bit ago, as it doesn't sound like anybody else really has either. So I just want to hit on a couple of themes for this. One, obviously, Chris is focused on the revenue neutrality piece of it to the state, but it isn't inconsequential to small businesses, S-Corps and LLC partnerships. So it can be a very significant assistance. The background of this, as Chris alluded to, is this limitation was put in to the federal tax bill a couple of years ago by the Trump administration. By all accounts, the things that I've read in the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere, to really punish income tax states like New York and California. We unfortunately got caught up in that, and I think it's hurt our small business community. And as you all, of course, know, Oregon is a small business state. So this is a very significant piece of legislation. If we can work through the details and make this work for small businesses here. Secondly, I don't think it's inconsequential to the philanthropy and charitable giving in this state. And I think I have a couple of letters that I'll submit for the record for you to review from the Oregon Community Foundation and others in support of making these changes, because I think they see from business owners their contributions affected by the tax rate here as well. So I think this is a good bill. We'll obviously take a look through the details and circle back with all of you as we all get familiar with the specifics. So thank you for the time.
Thank you. And I wanted, before we open it to questions, I wanted to thank Kate Toswell for getting us this amendment in time for the hearing today so that we can get this underway. There will be more discussion. We'll be reaching out to stakeholders to see if we need another hearing, or if there'll be plenty of time to work this. But I didn't want to put off the hearing today. So with the extra effort from Legislative Council, which is pretty overwhelmed right now with amendments, I really appreciate your getting it to us in time for the hearing, Kate. So, and Kate Toswell from Legislative Council is available if committee members have questions from that point of view. So, Senator Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a lot to try to digest. I mean, this... I have a few continuation of questions. My first question is the legal opinion available to review? I mean, Legislative Council's opinion on this. I mean, I'd be very curious and interested to read it and see where the basis is, because some of it looks like a bait and switch a little bit to me, and which makes me nervous. Now, I know that we wouldn't be doing that purposefully, but I mean, this is a pretty big deal. You know, the alternative income tax kind of reminds me of alternative facts of a few years ago, and I won't say any more about that. So question one is, does this require a 3/5 majority to pass this bill?
We'll pass that question to Kate, if you could answer that.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
We can.
Chair Burdick, Senator Finley, members of the committee, I'm Kate Toswell from the Office of Legislative Counsel, and I'm going to address Senate Bill 727-1, which would do two things. One is it would establish a new alternative it's called the Pass-Through Business Alternative Income Tax, and that would be a tax that would be paid at the entity level. And then in the same amendment, it would create an income tax credit that would be a credit against the personal income tax. And that credit would be available to the members or shareholders of an entity that elected, and it's an elective tax, that elected to pay the pass-through business alternative income tax. Now, the way that this is structured is it will always be revenue neutral. And that is because the way that the credit is structured, the way the credit would be calculated, would be that the tax that is paid by the income would be apportioned pro rata among the partners or the shareholders of the entity. I think Chris touched on that already, but essentially if you had three partners and they were equal partners and they had equal distributive shares coming from the pass-through entity, they would each be entitled to a share that was a credit that was one-third of the tax that was paid by the entity. So however it works, and whatever the rates are, and the rates can be, right now these rates are the rates that exist in the recently passed New Jersey statute. Whatever the rates are, it's still going to sum to zero. It's going to be revenue neutral. So if we start to look at the two provisions in the Constitution that are implicated by whether a bill is a bill for raising revenue, those are the origination clause in Article 4, Section 18, and the supermajority clause in Article 4, Section 25. The analysis that we always use for that, it's actually the same analysis for both provisions, and it goes through a series of steps. And the first step is you look at whether the bill, and this only applies to bills, it's bills for raising revenue, whether that bill brings monies into the state treasury. That is the first and threshold question that we ask. That's the test that's set forth in Bobo versus Kulongoski, and then has also been further explained to us by a more recent case, City of Seattle. And if you look at the bill and you see that it does not, or a court looks at the bill and sees that the bill does not bring money into the state treasury, the analysis goes no further. It's not a bill for raising revenue, and it means that it can originate in either chamber, House or Senate, and it can pass with a simple majority. You do not progress to the further steps. The second step of Bobo is, does the bill have the essential features of a bill levying a tax? But we don't need to move to that step if we answer the first question in the negative. And that is the approach that Oregon courts use in analyzing whether a bill is a bill for raising revenue. And so in looking at this, this bill can never, as it's drafted, this amendment can never bring monies into the state treasury because the credit is always offset by the tax at the entity level. So if that helps, if there are further questions, I can address them.
I do follow up, Madam Chair.
Please follow up, Senator Finley.
Thank you. So the next question is the term credit. So will this require that, you know, all of the tax credits that we have currently have now, not all of them, a large majority of them expire and we renew them on a 6-year basis or whatever the legislature chooses. So will this be a tax credit that will be entered in that same category that the Joint Committee on Taxation will meet, review, and appropriate and this credit for future years and be up for review every 6 years?
Chair Burdick, Senator Finley, and members of the committee, Senator Finley, you are correct in that generally all tax expenditures that are enacted after, I believe it's now 2014, have sort of a default of a 6-year tax year period. And that's currently in 315, ORS 315.037. This amendment is actually drafted to provide that the tax would apply to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2022, and the new credit would not withstand 315.037, and it would apply to all tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2022. So the statutory provision that says that we have a default of 6 years, and that 6 years applies if a bill is silent as to the applicability, and generally all of our tax credit drafts have that 6 years, tax expenditures in general, this overrides that. And so that would be a policy choice for the Legislative Assembly, but the way that it's drafted, it applies to all years and it does not expire after 6 years. So the new tax and the new credit both would, under this bill, exist in perpetuity.
Thank you. Perhaps that we ought to, because I'm a pretty simply minded person. We had a state that does not, you know, the tax credit renewal policy does not apply, and it's not subject to the Joint Taxation Committee. One of the reasons I'm getting to this line of questions, Madam Chair, is that what is to keep future legislators from easily just eliminating the tax credit? And then we've now created a pretty little tax increase policy. So I'm just curious about that. And if we codify that in this language, it says these tax credits are not reviewable. They do not sunset. They're entrenched in the body of the law. So they're tied to the credits as they come the other side. So I'm thinking out loud, Madam Chair. I've only read this for about an hour, so.
Well, you raise a really good point, and I think that might call for some kind of language, a poison pill for if one piece goes away, then the other automatically goes away. I think that's what you're trying to get at, isn't it, Senator Finley?
It absolutely is, man. I mean, Madam Chair, we ought to be linked. I mean, if one offsets the other and it's simply changing the liability and moving it around, which I'm for anything to lowering the tax rates for individuals, but they ought to be linked so you can't remove right. part of it and not all of it. And
I'm really glad you raised that. And another possibility would be to put a sunset on the whole bill. And just so that we would have a chance to look, because it does have a tax credit in it, and to have a chance to review it in 6 years and see whether it still makes sense.
I think that's a great idea.
Madam Chair, sorry to interrupt. I'm getting a message that we need to stand at ease because we're not broadcasting.
Oh, we're not. Okay.
So if you could,
be at ease.
Sorry about that.
Queuing, just waiting for it to come up. It shows it's broadcasting.
Okay.
Okay, we will call the committee back to order after our brief pause. And Senator Finley had a concern that we will ask him to repeat so that we make sure that we have a full broadcast. Senator Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question was, is there an ability to link the two components of this measure so they're irrevocable or inseparable in the future, and perhaps an option to have the tax have it as reviewed as a part of the tax credit procedures that the rest of them are?
Okay. Kate Toswell, would you like to address that? You're on mute.
Sorry about that. Did Corinne say, are we still, is it still working? I thought Corinne had maybe said there was an issue with the broadcast. Okay.
I think the issue is not fixed. We do need to pause again. I'm so sorry. It's IS is looking into it and media.
Okay, we will pause. And if we have to, we'll just. And in light of the fact that we've had little limited experience with this complicated amendment, we will put off this hearing for another meeting. And at this point, we will adjourn the committee. So thank you, committee. We are adjourned.